If you've got message notes this morning, they say Joshua 2 to 4 at the top of them, okay? I'm going to do a little Bible study with you folks. By the way, y'all still with me? Okay, good. I'm going to do a little Bible study with you on Joshua chapter 2 through 4. So if you got the Bible, turn there. If you need message notes, raise your hand, and we'll get some airmail to you. And I want to begin with a quote that is on the top of that outline. Warren Wiersbe said this, and this is a great quote. Unbelief says, let's go back to where it's safe. Faith says, let's go forward to where God is working. 40 years before, Joshua and Caleb had assured the nation, let's go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. That's faith. But the people said, we're not able. That's unbelief, and it cost the nation how long? 40 years, and really the rest of most of their lives in the wilderness. I want to talk about faith and the power of faith this morning. Here's the problem. Faith is a little bit of a confusing subject because when the Bible refers to faith, faith is really on three levels, and it's kind of like you got to, for example, in English, we use the same words, and it can mean a whole bunch of things. For example, somebody can say the word love. It can be like, I love green beans, or I love my wife. Now, it better be two different levels of love. Would you agree? Yeah, sometimes it's not, but it better be, okay? Now, when the Bible uses the word faith, it gets a little bit confusing. And so what I want to do is, you got three lines in there. You can jot them in if you want. I'll just come down and look at the screen with you, okay? Now, if you're looking up here, go to the next slide. There we go, okay? Sometimes when the Bible uses the word faith, it is referring to saving faith, and saving faith is connecting to God, okay? Saving faith is, that is what connects me to God. It is Ephesians chapter 2. By grace you have been saved through faith, okay? In other words, sometimes the Bible is talking about saving faith. That is first base. And by the way, if I don't have that kind of faith, I can sit in church every day of my life and it will never connect to God, okay? So the first kind of faith is saving faith. Good. Then there's a second kind of faith, and it is doctrinal faith, okay? Saving faith connects me to God. Doctrinal faith connects me to God's truth. Jude says, we contend for the faith, which is the body of things we as Christians believe. And one of the sad things going on in America right now is there are a lot of God's people, they have saving faith, but they never go on and learn their Bibles, which means they have saving faith, but they don't have doctrinal faith, which means they have a relationship with God. They don't have a relationship with God's truth or Scripture. And when you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. One of the reasons I love Mount Hermon for over 100 years, this place has helped people learn the Word of God and has built up their doctrinal faith. Would you agree? Now, here's the problem. First kind of faith is saving faith. Second kind of faith is doctrinal faith. And you know what the problem is? One of the problems in America is this. Most Christians have both of those, and they're still miserable. Matter of fact, some Christians, the more they learn their Bible, the angrier they become and the more judgmental and critical. Have you met these people? Okay, I had one come up to me after a church a while back. Every pastor knows what this is like. Had this guy come up, and he's mad, and he's got a large Bible, and he pins me into a corner. And this guy's pinned me into a corner, and he's going, I've got a question for you. And I go, what's your question? He looks at me, and he says, what's your view of the tribulation? And I know what he's talking about. Am I pre-trib, mid-trib, all of this? How many of you know what I'm talking about? How many of you got no clue? Okay, really doesn't matter. Christ is going to come back when he feels like it. Okay, now, he's got all of this kind of stuff, and he's pinned me in a corner, and this guy's mad. I finally stopped him, and I said, how long have you been in our church? He said, this is my first time. And I'm thinking, didn't your mother ever teach you how to act? Okay. How many of you pastors have met people like this? Well, it's going to be uniform around it. And he said, and I'm thinking that, you know what? Instead of would it have helped this guy to answer his question? No. I just put my arm and I said, you know what? I said, trust me on this. You're not going to like our church. there are a lot of other churches. I don't want him staying and multiplying. Okay? Because the last thing we need in America are thousands of angrier Christians. Would you agree? I don't want this guy multiplying. I said, you're not going to like our church, okay? There's a really good Baptist church down the street, okay? Yeah, go there. And what I realize is he's got saving faith. He's got doctrinal faith. He does not have the third, which is practical faith. Practical faith, which here it is. Practical faith is literally responding to God's call. It is getting out of the boat. It is, and here's the problem. These folks are stuck in the wilderness for 40 years. Now, did the Israelites have saving faith? Yes, they had a relationship with God. Did they have doctrinal faith? Yeah, they did. They've got Moses, the author of the first five books, teaching the Bible. I mean, you're stuck with me this morning. They had Moses teaching them doctrinal faith. They did not have practical faith. They were not living by faith. And even though they had the first two, they spent 40 years in the wilderness because they never responded to the call of God. Does that make sense? And so I just want to ask and answer one question, because I believe this. Churches in America are packed with people who have saving faith and who have doctrinal faith and who aren't living by faith. They are missing the adventure. They've got a rudder. They've got no sail to catch the wind of God's Spirit and respond and actually live by faith. So all I want to do is walk you through Joshua 2, 3, and 4 and ask the question, what are the characteristics of an alive, practical faith? And characteristic number one, none of these things sound like the kind of thing you normally learn in church. Here it is. First one is this. Biblical faith is an intelligent faith. Biblical faith is actually an intelligent faith. And Joshua chapter 2, here's the deal. Joshua chapter 1, let me give you the setting. God has been saying to Joshua, hey, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous. Finally, you are going to go into the land. And chapter 2, verse 1, it would seem like a very disappointing verse because he gets them all wound up. Okay, you're ready for the first time in 40 years. You're going forward. Trust me, be strong and courageous, and go. And then here's chapter 2, verse 1. Check it out. Then Joshua, son of Nun, and you're ready for him to spring into action, secretly sent two spies, go look over the land, especially Jericho. Is this disappointing or what? God says, be strong, be courageous, go after it. And instead, Joshua sends out two spies. What's going on here is this. Biblical faith is an intelligent faith. I know people, I talked to a guy one time, he's a college guy, it's finals time. I go, man, you getting any sleep? He goes, oh yeah. I go, you studying hard? He goes, oh, no. He goes, I just trust God. I'm like, if you trust God and do not study, you are not going to pass classes. Would you agree? Somehow this guy had not figured out biblical faith actually requires thinking. It requires hard work. Let me give you a great quote. Warren Wiersbe, again, same guy said this. Faith is not a passive feeling. It is an active force. That's good, isn't it? When you read the great faith chapter of Scripture, Hebrews 11, you discover the people mentioned there all did something because they believed God. Abraham believed God. He left Ur and headed for Canaan. Because Moses believed God, he defied the gods of Egypt and led the Jews to freedom. Because Gideon believed God, he led a small band to defeat a large enemy. Here's a great phrase. Living faith always leads to what? Action. In other words, living faith, biblical faith is an intelligent faith. And one of the problems is most Christians don't get this, don't live this way. They don't study. They don't pursue answers. They don't get out of the boat. They don't live by faith, which is why I believe, I grew up in an executive jet set, totally pagan home. My dad was a committed atheist, and I asked him one time, what's the deal with God? He said, well, there probably isn't a God, but if there is a God, he started the entire world, but he does not care about us or any of that stuff. That was my total religious upbringing as a child. My dad was a successful business guy. People wanted to run him for governor of California. He turned him down. They ran a guy named Ronald Reagan instead. So I actually grew up believing that biblical faith was anything other than intelligent. It took me 6 to 8 months of studying to cross the line of faith. And you know what? Here's what happened. I finally had more doubts about my atheism and more faith in Christ. And it was then 51 to 49, and I ended up following Jesus. Okay? And now it's about 75-25. Okay? But I'll give you an example. I'm speaking at a youth conference in Southern California. Now, this could only happen in Southern California. High school kids wake up. This high school sophomore, he was a high school sophomore, so of course this kid knew everything. And this kid comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, dude." And I'm like, "Yeah, dude." He goes, "Dude, like, you're like an awesome speaker, dude." And I'm like, "You're like an awesome listener, dude." This kid uses the word like every other word. Any of you know people like this? It's a Southern Cal deal, okay? And he goes, "You're like," and he goes, "There like is only like one problem." And I go, "What likes that?" He goes, "Well, dude, I really like listening to you, but," he goes, "there's only one problem." I go, "What likes that?" He goes, "The Bible's not true." And I look at him and I go, "Oh, man," I took my Bible, I threw it away, and I went, "I'm going to have to get a new job." And he looks at me like, "Dude, really?" And I go, "Yeah, dude, like," and then I got my Bible back and I said, "First of all, before I quit, do me a favor, show me which parts aren't true." And he goes, "I don't know, dude." And I go, "Show me, like, what, give me one contradiction." He goes, "Dude, I don't know." And I go, "Have you ever read it?" And he goes, "No, dude." And I go, "So what you're telling me is you're pretty convinced a book you have never read, have no idea what's in, you know isn't true." And he looks at me, big grin on his face. He goes, "Dude, does that sound stupid?" You make the call, okay? Here's the deal. Biblical faith. You know what I love about Joshua? Does Joshua have saving faith? Yeah. Doctrinal faith? Yes. Does he have practical faith? Yes. It does not stop him from doing his homework. It does not stop him from planning. It does not stop him from saying. Biblical faith is an intelligent faith, and you do not have to turn your brain off to be a Christian. It actually helps if you keep it turned on. God gave us a brain. Let's use it. Number one is this. Biblical faith is an intelligent faith. Second mark of practical faith out of this passage is biblical faith is a liberating faith. Biblical faith is a liberating faith. Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." Biblical faith is a liberating faith. Now, I grew up outside the Christian church. I end up becoming a Christian. And somebody one day told me, "Hey, your name's Ray. There's a person in the Bible named Rahab." And I was all excited. I'm thinking, this has got to be a great person in the Bible. They were this, and for some reason, this person was really excited for me to find out what this person did for a living. So I said, "Where is this person named Ray?" And they said, "It is in Exodus. It is in Joshua chapter 2. Here it is. It's in your outline. Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab. Okay, so what did Rahab do for a living? Yeah, I finally find somebody in the Bible named Ray, and it turns out she is a hooker. This does not look good on the spiritual resume, does it? And Rahab ends up being, it's funny, you'll notice on your outline when we gave you the outline of that, our printer actually misprinted chapter 2, Rahab and the Spies. And I looked at that when I was checking it, and I said, leave it. Just cross out Rahab and write Rahab, because I thought he got it right in chapter 2. Rahab gets rehabbed. And you know what's interesting about this? I love the liberating things in the Bible. Rahab, a former prostitute, ends up coming to faith, and here's the deal. Read the great faith chapter in the Bible, which is Hebrews chapter 11. It's God's hall of faith. You read that right in the middle of these great women and men in the faith is the name of Rahab. Hey, it gets better. Jesus' genealogy, Matthew chapter 1. These are Jesus' ancestors. Right in the middle of Jesus' family tree is Rahab. And you know what? I'm proud of the writers of the Bible for keeping that in. Do you have any relatives that you just don't mention? She's right there. And I love, biblical faith is a liberating faith because you end up freed from your past. I'll give you an example of this. I was speaking about 10 years ago in Mexico, and there were a couple thousand teenagers, and it's outdoors, and they're doing missions all week. And it is the last night, and I'm up, and I'm basically saying to these students, you know what, some of you are we're all going home tomorrow. Some of you have some things you need to leave in Mexico. I'd actually say the same thing. It's Friday morning here at Mount Hermon. We're all going home tomorrow. Some of you have some things you need to leave here. Hebrews chapter 12 says, let go of the sin that so easily entangles us. And I said to these students, some of you have got a spirit of anger and bitterness. You need to leave that here. I said, some of you are going home with a plan to sin. Leave that here. And I looked at these students, and these are 1,000 students from churches all over California. And I said, some of you, you brought alcohol down here, and you brought drugs down here. You need to leave that stuff here, commit your life to Christ, and let that stuff go. Because the key to life is really all about what you let go of. And I said, matter if you, now it's late night, we're outdoors, it's the evening, last chapel. And I said, here's the deal. If you brought alcohol down here or you brought drugs down here, I've got a real simple solution for you. Commit your life to Christ. And then I said, see all those baños over there? And we got these outside Mexican bathrooms. They literally, after a week in the hot Mexican sun, they reek. And I said, take your alcohol, take your drugs, go over there, open the door, walk in, shine your flashlight down at the bottom, look at what's down there, then drop all your alcohol and drugs down there. And if you are so tempted to go back after that stuff that you're tempted to climb down there, you got a problem, come see me. It's about 15 minutes after chapel, and these three really cool teenagers walk up, two high school girls and one guy. And they walk up, they got these sort of sombreros and serapes and stuff, and they walk up and they said, they're all kind of choked up. And they said, Ray, we got something for you. I said, what's up? And they said, we committed our hearts and life to Jesus Christ tonight, and we are giving this up. And they went, here. And they handed me this huge stash of marijuana. My first thought, to be honest with you, is, hey, now we can pay for our church building. This rocks, okay? Or as the president said, I did not inhale. And you know what's interesting is, I walked these kids over to the bathroom. They opened up that door. They dropped all of their drugs down at the bottom of that baño, walked out. I prayed for these kids, and I watched these kids walk back to their team and to their future, and I thought to myself, those teenagers just saved themselves and their parents and their future from years of heartache. Would you not agree? Okay, from years of heartache. The biblical faith, connecting to God, walking by faith is a liberating faith because you will never go where God wants you to go until I can let go of the stuff that's anchoring me to where I'm at. Does that make sense? I've got to let it go. There's a third mark. I want to make sure you're with me, okay? Point number one, biblical faith is an intelligent faith. Second, biblical faith is a liberating faith. Third, biblical faith is a concerned faith. Biblical faith is a concerned faith. Now, how do you discover that? Chapter 2. Then the king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sends this message to Rahab. Now, there's a guy going, hey, if men are in this town, they're probably at Rahab's. So He says, bring out the men who've come to you and entered your house because they've come to spy out the whole land. But she had taken the two men and hidden them. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, I know the Lord's given this land to you and that a great fear of you has fallen on us so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt and what you did. And they basically goes on, we know that you're wiping everybody out. Go down. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign you will spare the lives of my father and mother and brothers and sisters and all who belong to us. And here's a key phrase. Are you ready for this? And that you will what? Save us from death. Would you circle the word save us? You will save us. How do you know her faith was real? You know what? She wanted her family saved. I actually believe this. Somebody, and this is not popular these days. This is not politically correct these days. I believe this. The more genuine someone's faith is, the higher their passion it is to see everybody they know saved. And it may be kids saved from dying. It may be girls saved from sex trafficking. It may be people saved from a meaningless life. But in other words, somebody's passion to see people saved in every way, shape, or form, to see marriages saved. I was at a pastor's conference a while back in Chicago, went in, a couple thousand pastors, and I'd wrapped up speaking. And for the rest of the week, people kept coming up to me saying, if you're a pastor, you know, people will come up and they'll go, hey, how's your church doing? Is your church doing okay? And after about the 10th person asked me, hey, is your church doing okay? I started thinking about it. I thought, given what's going on in our world, okay is not okay with me. Would you agree? I actually, to be honest with you, at a point in my life where I have absolutely no desire whatever to be connected to a Christian ministry that settles for okay. And let me ask you another question while I'm at it. How many of you go to a church? Okay, probably a good thing. Who is your church's competition? Who is your church's competition? Okay, the Presbyterians, the Baptists down the street. You know what's interesting is we are not, at Bayside, we are not in competition with any other Christian church. We are all allies and we are all in the same family, have the same Lord, and we are all on the same team. Okay, we do have competition. Jesus said this, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Our competition is the gates of hell. And I believe this, every time a marriage blows up and a family is destroyed in our community, hell wins. Every time a child grows up in South Sacramento and does not have the same resources that a kid does in the suburbs, and so their life ends up limited because of lack of resources and equal opportunity, hell wins. Would you agree? In other words, and I think hell is winning a lot these days. And I believe this, the job of the Christian church is to be so concerned that people are saved in every way that you know what our job is as a church? Our job is to put hell out of business. That's our job. And that's a big deal, okay? There are teenagers, would you raise your hand for a second? Okay? Okay, you are the church of what? Bingo, today. And I don't usually tell this story, and I haven't told it here in a long time, but because there are a lot of teenagers here, I want to give you an example of this. Years ago, I was a senior pastor in Southern California. I resigned being a senior pastor, and I moved to Northern California, and I got a promotion, and I moved from being a senior pastor to being a youth pastor. Okay, it's a gigantic promotion, but I made a major mistake. I became a youth pastor in Marin County, California. Anybody heard of Marin County? Okay, it is the wealthiest county in America. Okay, it is 95% Caucasian. It's so lily white, it's sickening. Okay, the Golden Gate Bridge connects Marin and San Francisco. Robin Williams, who comes from Marin County, says there's an ethnic detector on the Golden Gate Bridge. And any non-white yuppies that try to get into Marin, it flips them into the San Francisco Bay. Okay, I take a job at the church in the center of the county that has all of the wealthy people there and their teenagers. You want to guess what they were like? I walk into high school Sunday school class for the first day. I look around at 18 of the brightest, best-looking, logo on everything, Harvard, Princeton, Azusa Pacific bound students, and I thought to myself, this is the most apathetic, boring bunch of church brats I've ever seen in my life. Okay, nothing's worse than church kids disconnected from the passion of Jesus Christ. And I went home and I went, this is the most apathetic bunch of boring church brats I've ever seen. I thought, I'm going to get them into missions and service if it kills me. It nearly did. I walked back in to Sunday school class the next week, and I said, hey, what? Now it's September. I said, what do you do during Easter? And I didn't even let him answer because I gave him this hour-long manipulative pitch. We're going to Mexico. We're going to serve the poor. It's going to be incredible. All this, I gave him this hour-long pitch about going to Mexico. And then I said, okay, who's with me? And they all went, no. 18 straight no's. I said, what do you do during Easter? You know what their answer was? We ski. We ski in Vail, ski in Aspen, ski in Tahoe, ski in Fresno. We ski. Except for one girl, sophomore girl, who said, last Easter, we flew to Paris and shopped. And she said it like, didn't we all? And I said, well, you know, I didn't, but of course my wife did. Well, here's the deal. It's this September. It took 6 months of motivating, begging, lying. These big stud guys would come up. Ah, man, we know we should go, but you don't get it. We ski together. It's a tradition. And I'm saying stuff like this. Bring your skis. The skiing in Mexico in April is awesome. Okay. What happens is this. It arrives. Easter arrives. We have 38 high school students bound, gagged, and handcuffed on their way to Mexico. Some of them have still not arrived from the first trip to Mexico because they get into Mexico and the first thing they see is four guys, Mexican national guys, laying a friend of theirs down by the side of the road. No arms, no legs. Four amputations. And these rich kids are saying stuff to me like, what happened? And I'm saying things like, I don't know, maybe he didn't have enough money to get medical help in time. And that got at him. And people living in cardboard shacks got at him. And moms with kids who were ribs were sticking out because they didn't have like $15 to get that kid to a doctor. That stuff got at him. But the big shocker was this. We go down there. Saturday night we arrive. We set up tents. We headquarter about 1,000 other people. And then Sunday morning we go to find our church for the first time. And we can't find it. Anybody been to Mexico? Okay, we can't find it because every highway in Mexico is Highway 2. Have you noticed this? Okay, and it was like turn right at Highway 2 and left at Highway 2 and then turn left at the donkey and right at the burro, and they'd moved. Okay, and finally, after an hour of driving around, we finally find the church, and the second we pull up, I realize something's gone terribly wrong. Because here's what's supposed to happen. You arrive, there's a church, there's a bunch of people, you worship with these folks, and then you team up together to bring the love of Christ to their community and serve their community. And the minute we pull up, there's no church. It's a burned out shell of a building. Four charred walls, the roof is burned and crashed in. And now I have 38 teenagers looking at me going, way to go, Ray. And then I hear noise. I'm standing out there going, I don't know what to do. I hear noise on the inside of the building. And I'm thinking, what do we do? What's polite? Should we go in? Should we stay out? And I thought, wait a second. We just drove 1,000 miles, man. Let's go to church. So I sneak around behind, and I look in this burned-out window, and here is what I see. Up front, there is a young, tough-looking Mexican national pastor. And he is preaching his heart out to 9 very discouraged-looking people sitting on these charred benches. And now I'm going, well, let's go to church. I call these kids over. It had to be a major shock to this pastor, okay? Because, I mean, this is the middle of nowhere Mexico. This is like Fresno, Mexico, and all of a sudden, 38 white yuppie teenagers file in the back of this guy's church. He's so shocked, he stops, and he says, ¿Qué pasa? Which translated means, what are you yuppies doing here? And we had this high school guy named Greg who spoke Spinglish. And Greg said in Spinglish as best he could, we are Christians from the U.S. We are here to help and serve in any way we can. Hear those two words? We are here to help and serve. They'd never done either one of these things before. Biblical faith is a concerned faith. And he says, we're helping. And you know, the pastor understood this, and he gets real emotional. And, I mean, he gets tense and emotional. He's a tough-looking guy. And here's the deal. He's up front, nine people worshiping in the middle. Our kids are all in back. And he stares at us, and you could have cut the tension with a knife. And I'm thinking, he has no clue we're coming. He's going to kick us out. And our kids, some of our kids starting to get, and then he says these words, which I will never, he says, they, and we found out later, there was a gang in the village. He said, they burned our church down 6 months ago. And he looked right at our kids and said, and for 6 months, we've been praying that God would send help to rebuild our little church, but we'd given up hope help would ever arrive, but here you are. Our kids are in the back going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And you know what's interesting? Every group has a big mouth kid. Okay, every camp does right here. He's right back there, right in the middle. Okay, every group's got a big mouth kid. Ours, here's this pastor say, we've been praying for 6 months. Here you are. And this kid, not a humble kid, blurts out, yeah, we're an answer to prayer. You know what's interesting? That was their theme all week long. They're walking around high-fiving each other. Hey, answer to prayer. Bam. And you know what's interesting? They were. Back home, they caused prayer. Down here, they were an answer. We had these gorgeous, beautiful Marin County high school girls, some who'd never even seen dirt. They came down with truckloads of curling irons because I forgot to tell them there was no electricity, okay? And you know what's interesting? 2 days into it, they've stashed that stuff, and they are running. They have stashed that stuff, and they are running around, and they are rolling the dirt with these beautiful kids from Mexico, and they have never looked more attractive. More boyfriend and girlfriend hookups happen on mission trips because there is a sparkle in the eyes of girls who are living for something more important than in looking good that is never there when they're just looking, living to look good. Does that make sense? Okay, we these high school guys. Like never done work. Now we're in the building the second day, no roof, and this one guy goes, hey, why don't they have a roof? It's a convertible church. Why don't they have a roof? And it burned down. Why don't they put a new one on? Doesn't it ever rain down here? They spent all the money they had on the first one, and some of these people are living on like $50 a month. It was their all-time, one-time sacrifice to get this roof built in the first place. He goes, why don't we pay for it? I faint. They get me back. Some kid whiffs off a sombrero and says, let's take an offering. Everybody, give it up. These are Marin County kids. They are getting out wads like you've never seen. Okay? One girl, do they take American Express Platinum down here? You know, it's funny. They made me photograph the offering to show to their parents they gave away money. 2 days later, our high school men and women are on the roof building a brand new roof for this church, and by the end of the week, the church had an entire new roof. Our teenagers teamed with those villagers, got the entire roof rebuilt in 4 days, which didn't do any good anyway, because by the end of the week, we were doing these evening evangelistic services, and our kids are speaking, and our kids are sharing their faith, and our kids are working with all of this stuff, and we had to move outside the church building, and we're showing the Jesus movie on the wall because so many people from the village are coming, they wouldn't fit in the church building anymore. Well, our teenagers go back to school then following Monday, and their friends are all going, man, nice tan. Where'd you go? Vail, Aspen, Tahoe? And our kids are going, no. Where'd you go? Mexico. You can't ski in Mexico. What'd you do? I built a church. I'm an answer to prayer. I mean, they're chasing their friends down to class going, this is good. You want, here's what happens. When God's people get a faith that is intelligent and liberating, and they add concern to that faith, it lights a fire in the church. Our youth group exploded. The next year, we had 86 high school students sign up and go down to Mexico. Well, here's the problem with that. It's Marin Covenant Church. We had no church van and no church bus. How many of you are in a church with no church van or no church bus? How many of you have a church van, but it's embarrassing, okay? Yeah, most of those things should say repaint, not repent, on the sides. And so here's what I had to do. I had to get up in front of our church on a Sunday morning. I got up in front of our church, and I said, we are taking 86 teenagers to Mexico. We need to borrow your cars. That was their exact response. BMW, basic Marin wheels, uh-uh. So we got no response, not one car. The next week, I called a guy named Al Wade. Every church has somebody in it that has what I call the gift of guilt. And I called Al and I said, you got to make the announcement this week and drill him. Okay? So Al and I will never forget this. It is Sunday morning. It is the middle of Marin County, Executive Wealthyville, USA. And Al Wade walks up and gets in front of our people, and he says these words, and it destroyed the church. He said, did you hear the rumor about our church? The adults are willing to send their kids, but not their cars, to Mexico. It was awesome. We had 18 vehicles donated on one Sunday. One guy, Tim Standish, donated a four-door Mercedes-Benz, which I drove to protect. I felt responsible for the thing. As long as I live, I will never forget being in the middle of nowhere, Mexico, with 38 teenagers who were going, we're an answer to prayer, because I stood back and I watched it all happen. And I thought to myself, they are right. The second somebody has a saving, liberating faith and they finally cross the line into concern, and they finally serve, and they finally give their life to be used by God, here's what happens. You wake up and discover you have become the answer to somebody else's prayer. And I want to close with this one question. Why would you want to live any other way? Why would you want to live any other way? Now, I have about another hour to go, and I am out of time, okay? See this whole back page, okay? I'm going to give you point four. And I'm going to give you the first line, and then the rest of this, see where it says marks of obedient faith? Yeah, come on up, Dave. See where it says marks of obedient faith? You can go on to BaysideOnline.com and watch this whole thing, okay? You can get all of the rest of this on BaysideOnline.com if you want this. But I want to give you the fourth mark, but I want to make sure you got the first three. Page one, biblical faith, first of all, is an intelligent faith. Second, you're liberated from your past. Third, it is a concerned faith. And I believe this, if I'm not concerned, I don't have the real thing. And the last one is this, is biblical faith is an obedient faith. Biblical faith is an obedient faith. And I hesitated to read this verse in my church, and we got a lot of teenagers in here. Here's the deal. It is Joshua chapter 3, and they are finally ready after 40 years to obey God and finally go forward. And you read this verse. And sorry about this verse. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from... They set out, it's in the Bible. They set out from Shittim. Anybody else wonder about the Bible at this point? They set out from Shittim. Now, there's a lot of teenagers in here. Our 11:30 service has a whole section packed with teenagers. And so when we 11:30, I had to stop. They were laughing. They were like, hey, I finally found my life first. And I finally went, we're just going to nickname this town town number two. And some of you will get that, and some of you won't. The early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from the town of Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before. The only thing I want to say about this is this. Would you not agree, what an ironic name of a town you do not want to get stuck in? A great place to leave. A biblical faith is an obedient faith. And I want to wrap these four up by making sure you got it. Biblical faith is an intelligent faith. It's second, it is a liberating faith. Third, it is a concern. And fourth, do I have time to show a quick video? Okay. I want to show you a video to wrap this up. You will see all four of these faith characteristics in one person. And let's just roll it. It's unbelievable.